There ain't no sense sitting on the fence all by yourself in the moonlight. Love's a farce, sitting on the grass all by yourself in the moonlight. La 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 la, la 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 la. There ain't no fun sitting on your bum all by yourself in the moonlight. La 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 la.
Hey, hang on. Just a minute. Excuse me. I wasn't expecting this. It's caught me by surprise. Excuse me. I say hello. Hello, you over there. Look. You must stop at once. My demand to see the manager. This is an outrage. I say, excuse me.
Arnold is going to make our phone call across the sea. He's calling Roger Ruskenspear of the inimitable Bonzo Dog Zuda Band. And they are a major part of my musical history.
Hello? Yes, I'm just going to call Roger. Hang on a second.
Hello?
Hey, Roger, can you hear us?
Just about. Very quiet.
Okay, we'll pump it up a bit more. Is that any better?
That's better. I can just about hear you. Sounds like you're coming from Australia.
Well, we're halfway there.
Just go a bit further in the other direction.
Exactly. We're on the just off the San Andreas Fault, actually.
Well, that's your fault, not mine. Yeah.
Well, fortunately, we're not on fire. This is Stephen. Hi.
It's an awfully muffled voice. I know my hearing's going, but this is ridiculous.
Could you turn that down?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I can hear you.
Is that any better now?
Getting a bit better.
Okay, we'll just shout very loud.
Well, it is a long way.
That's true. We still use semaphore out here.
Tell me if I'm shouting too much.
No, we can hear you great.
Yeah, because I'm tending to sort of think that you can't hear me, so I won't shout.
No, you sound very cool and relaxed, actually.
Cheers, good.
Anyway, as I should say state as it said in a great Bonzo song, it's a great honour, sir.
You'll have to repeat that.
It's a great honour, sir. That's from the intro and the outro.
Yeah.
It's a great honour for you for us to have you on Cows.
Oh, right. And an honour to speak to you, too.
All right. We love you. We love you and Bonzo's. Both of us here have been just totally crazed fanatics of you, so it's just wonderful to have you on, and I want to ask a whole bunch of questions.
Yep, no problem.
Well, again, let's go back to your childhood.
Can you put a bit of echo on that?
Okay, exactly. Childhood.
That's the one.
So, well, what made you, what inspired you, what got you into music, what made you crazy?
Well, you'll know who he is, but I don't know any of your friends out there on the West Coast. Well, Acker Bilk.
Acker Bilk? Yeah. Stranger on the Shore.
You must have heard of Acker Bilk. He got to Hampstead Town Hall before I did, I think.
and a few other places.
Stranger on the Shore, yes. It was good old Acker Bilk and trad jazz in the 50s that made me buy a clarinet. I was over in West London, and the rest of the guys were around somewhere over in East London, I think. I bought this clarinet and started playing in a jazz band. I ran a big band, actually, a very big Duke Ellington type band.
Oh.
And I don't know, I thought, you know, it's got to be more to life than this, really. And my banjo player and trumpet player said, there's this terrible band over in South Kensington. They're making a dreadful row. But they're getting away with it, you know. So I went down to this pub in South Kent, and there was Rod and Viv and Sam Spoons, thrashing away and making this awful noise. And so I brought my trumpet player down, Lenny, and Big Sid, the banjo player. He's in some of the early pictures, old Big Sid.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the big chap at the back in the early pictures.
Oh, okay.
You know, it said sit in. So I sort of sat in. And Neil sort of turned around the piano and said, that was great solo, join the band. I said, well, no, I don't want to join bands. So I'll tell you what, Lenny and I will come along to the next gig, you know, and we'll see how it goes. So we kept turning up to the next gig, really. And that was it.
Wow. And what year was that?
That was roughly 1965, I should think, four. A few years previously, Rod had met Viv and formed the band. So I was the sort of midway. I joined it sort of midway.
Oh, okay.
Legs Larry Smith came along a bit later.
Ah, okay. Now, Stephen,
that's where how it got started, really. Aka Bilk.
Wow, Stranger on the Shore.
Stranger on the Shore.
Actually, I do have an album of his.
Yes, he's still very big over here.
Oh, great.
He's doing the circuits. In fact, I used to, when I did my own solo act, around the 1975 time, I used to support for him at a club down in London. And also Humphrey Littleton, people like that.
Oh, great.
But old Acker's still at it.
Oh, great. Great character.
He must be getting on a bit now.
I would think so. If I am, he must be.
Well, that's it. We're all getting on. One tends to think of you guys over there as being sort of how I used to remember you guys over there. Not that you were over there when I was over there, when you were sort of thing, you know what I mean?
Well, I think I was over there when you were over here.
Yes, well, I was here when
because,
you were there.
Because I got to see you in San Francisco, and it was one of the highlights of my musical life.
back in what? Yes, because we were over
there.
It was
in the 60s or the early
70s. Yeah, we were over there, weren't we? Yeah.
So how do you enjoy touring compared to playing at home?
I don't know, really. Who'd have thought?
Right.
who'd have thought? Was it 40 years on?
Yeah.
What are we doing? So, it was good. Interesting, as I say, because we really hadn't seen each other for 40 years.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, really. I mean, Viv was going quite balmy, really.
Oh, yeah.
And so I don't know if Viv had still been alive, whether it would have happened, really, because what sort of planet Viv would have been on, I don't know. we really sort of formed a couple of years ago to really satisfy this maniac sort of fan we've got over here, complete lunatic, who happens to have £1 million. To spend, you see.
Oh my goodness!
He joined the band. I mean, as you say yourselves, you as little there's maniacs over there. There's Bonzo fans all over the place, and they would like to see the Bonzos again, I suppose. So this guy, just right. Well, okay. I want to see the Bonzos. I better put them on myself. He organised this, and he had the wherewithal to do it, you know. So he put on this reunion concert a couple of years ago, and we all...
Can you still hit the high notes?
Sorry?
Can you still hit the high notes?
Yep. Oh, yes, with amazing lack of accuracy. Exactly how I used to.
I want to hear some dirty stories from the old days. I hear about rock stars being privy to all these little perks and backstage things, and I'm wondering if you have anything memorable you'd like to share with us.
Would I like to share?
Yeah.
In what way?
Verbally, not physically.
Well, you opened for the Stones, so something must have happened backstage.
I tell you what. Presumably, you've heard of the Sex Pistols, have you?
Yeah.
Those awful people over here. I did their first gig, you know. They supported. Yeah, they were my support act. Well, it wasn't mine. You see, it was a bit of a fiddle, really, because it was Viv. Viv was booked in, and this will be the magic Hampstead Town Hall time.
Right.
Around that sort of 70s, wasn't it? I think they were around, that was about it.
Exactly. Viv, yeah, mid 70s.
Was booked into a gig. And like Hampstead Town Hall, he didn't show up, or he couldn't show up, or something. Trying to fill in at the last moment, and it happened to be the Sex Pistols' first gig. Really, these gigs get booked up about a month in advance, you know, usually. So by the time it got round to doing the gig, it was a month later, and the Sex Pistols had sort of really. Made quite a big following in London, and they were booked in as sort of Viv support, really.
Wow.
So I went in and stepped in for Viv, always stepping in things. And they supported me, but I mean, when I got there, a few people came along to sort of chat with me, you know, sort of see them. They said, God, this band is the worst. I've never heard such a bad band. Because punk by then hadn't really, you know, we hadn't heard of punk, really.
Right.
All we knew about it was bad bands, you know, they couldn't play their instruments. And dreadful, but they'd obviously got this huge following. So I sort of looked at what was going on, and I thought, oh, no. So I said, look, I'll go on first. I leave you guys to it, just because... because I've got all the robots here, you see, and stuff, and they looked, and then Johnny Rotten threw up on my stripper robot.
Oh, no!
and they were peeing all over the place, you know, and it was dreadful, absolutely. I mean, it's not an act, you know. Punk isn't a sort of showbiz act, although we did do, punk became a bit like that. But in those days, it was genuine stuff, and I thought, I've got to get these robots out of here before these guys start playing, because I packed them all away and sort of did my act quickly and ran, because it was just, you know, pogoing everywhere and vomiting. they really were, but you know, they certainly looked destined for something.
Yeah.
But in a couple of years, because 2 years after that, it was an act. Not necessarily from them, but every other band was a punk band, you know. And you'd do these college gigs, and guys would turn up in suits and ties, and you know, and then when they go on, they were vomiting and swearing at each other, and then they go off again. And jolly good, Jim. See you at the next gig. A bit like Blue Men Sing the Whites, really.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's where Viv got that from, but in an earlier, more innocent time, really.
Well, now, one thing you may want to explain about your robots. Now, you were way ahead of your time on your giant kinetic wardrobe. Can you explain where that came from?
But I suppose equally, I was lacking woefully behind, because you know, you ask how it started. Apart from Acker Bilk, it was Bruce Lacey and the Alberts. They came to America. And lost all their money and came back again. But I think they made it across to the West Coast. We just about made it across there. To the Fillmore West, I think. You know,
That's right.
Bill Graham and his things. But it was really, I was inspired by Bruce Lacey, who was sort of 5 years ahead of us building robots.
Hmm.
So I thought, this is the way to go. And when the Bonzos split, I just quite simply built a load of robots to replace the Bonzos and went on the road with the robots.
Right.
did that for about 20 years, I suppose, or something, and then packed it in, really, because it was an uphill struggle. You know, the robots, they're great fun, but they're not exactly commercial.
Did you ever read the story by Carol Chapek called Rossum's Universal Robots, or you are?
I've sort of glanced. I've sort of glanced, but my robots, and of course, when Star Wars came along, you know, people, my robots, which are made out of old vacuum cleaners, washing machines, they...
very powerful.
They thought, no, it's got to be R2-D2, you know. So, really, I sort of did pack it in then, because I found it very difficult. I remember the actual spot when I packed it in was one night in a club in the King's Road, and alternative comedy had just about started, really, and no one, you know, the Bonzos, no one, you know, we've had a sort of resurgence, haven't we, really, I suppose?
Yes.
But there's always been diehard fans. But generally, the name disappeared, you know.
Yeah.
And certainly my name disappeared. And Neil's sort of name was still around. And I get to one gig, and they'd never heard of me. And the girl compere said, they've told me who you are. I'm going to introduce you now. So she leapt on stage and said, well, here he is. I don't know his name. She'd just forgotten his name. And so then she went for a second string to a bow and said, but he was in a band called the... And she blanked again, you know. I don't know. Then in a flash of inspiration, she said, oh... But he knows Neil Innes. And at that point, I thought, well, you know, sold this for a game of soldiers and packed up the robots. And I hadn't done it. I put them away in the box.
Oh, so they are still, they are somewhere.
Oh, yeah, they're here now. Yes, hey, man, look, you know, we're all alive. No, I brought them out for the reunions. And they're very much a feature now of what we're doing at the moment, which I insist on talking to you about.
Please do.
Do you dress them in trousers?
Am I interested in trousers?
Do you dress the robots in trousers?
I've got a pair of trousers on one of the robots.
Oh, great!
I've got
great.
They're mainly sort of strippers and bubble blowers and that sort of rubbish and things. But I built them, but I did put them away in about 1986 or something, but when we did our reunion tour, I thought, well, I'm not going to resurrect those. You know, it's too much work. But by the time we'd done our second one, this sort of maniac producer said, "Look, come on, I want to see the robots. You know, I'm a fan. I must see the." So I've rebuilt them, and they're thrashed into life again now.
Yeah.
And we use them now on the new act, because we got this new act. Having done a couple of the reunions, Neil sort of didn't want to do any more. You know, dead leg that he is. I mean, the rotter, absolute rotter, bounder and a scoundrel. He goes around telling people now, saying, no, the Bonzos don't ever want to do it again. They don't want to be called the Bonzo Dog Gaga Band and all this sort of thing. But he's only speaking for himself, really. The rest of us, so Neil packed in and said, I don't want to do it anymore. We just sort of got started, really. Let's carry on. So we are now three Bonzos and a piano. is the band, the latest band, which you can catch on the website. If you punch that into Google, you'll find it.
What do you have to punch into once you're on Google?
You have to punch in three Bonzos and a piano.
Okay.
If you put .com or something at the end of it, that's the actual website address. I'm not very good on these things. You see. I mean, I build robots, but I don't know much about computers.
On that side of it, right.
Certainly, three Bonzos and a piano, all one word. Punch it into Google, it'll come up with something. And that's Rodney Slater, our dear old Rod, on the saxophone. And He's a founder member of the Bonzos with Viv, and he's in. We're playing together, and we've got Sam Spoons on the Spoons. So that's the only three surviving Bonzos, really. The only reason it's and then we're playing with a pianist friend of ours called Dave Glasson, who can play anything that you put in front of him. Who's a wonderful chap, and he provides the musical sort of backbone of what goes on.
So if I may ask... I'm sorry. The three Bonzos on a piano, there's four guys in fezes, a picture?
Yes. Yeah,
which one
guys.
Is you?
Pardon?
Which one is you?
Which one is me?
Yes.
I'm
looking at your website.
You're looking at my website. you've got four blokes behind a piano.
Right.
With four red tubes on their heads.
Right.
As you look at it, I'm the one on the right, I think.
The far right?
Rodney's on the far left.
Okay.
Dave's easy because he's got the small hat on. And Sam's next to me in the other red hat.
Got it.
These are extended fezzes.
Oh, this is so much fun. It's like Arnaldo and I died and went to heaven. Speaking with you, like, this is so exciting.
So that's what we're doing at the moment. The reason there's only four of us, really, and the name, actually, which probably means absolutely nothing to you guys over there, or does it? Let me put a name to you. Jonathan Ross.
Ring a bell, no.
Absolute silence from the west coast of America. Right. That's great, because he's the biggest thing over here and earning hundreds of millions of pounds.
Huh.
He's got a show. And do you guys over there know what puffs are?
They may not know. Most Americans may not know that term.
Well, anyway, it's no point in telling you this, really, because you've never heard it.
Well, I think I do, but
there's four guys who sing barbershop harmony over here, and they're called Four Puffs and a Piano. And there's the house band for Jonathan Ross, who's a very big Saturday night, bit by David Letterman or something like that.
Oh, okay.
That's his hero. And, so we obviously called ourselves we didn't. We called ourselves Three Bonzos. there's only four of us because, really, economics, it's very difficult to get a sort of big band going around, touring around these days. So at the moment, we can only really afford to have four of us on the go. But we have occasionally Legs Larry Smith as a guest star.
Oh, great.
And Vernon Dudley Bohe Noel.
Oh, that's the best name in showbiz.
So they come along, but not at the same time. That would be too much. So we're gradually building it up to the old band, but we thought the best way is to start small and sneak in the back door. So we've got a tour lined up, and we're travelling all around. It's probably on that website you've got there somewhere.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Travelling about London, England. This summer, and just seeing how it goes, really. We're having incredible fun.
Oh, it's a wonderful thing.
We're playing the earlier stuff, really, that used to get played in 1966 down at the Tiger's Head in Catford. And we're recreating those sort of heady days when it was just total chaos. And it's total chaos now. So I think, we ain't got much longer to do this, so
yeah.
We all go crawl back in our boxes. So we're having a bit of a swan song over here.
Fantastic.
Does your son Justin ever express an interest in playing with you?
He's. I don't know whether you pick up over there. I'm sure they stream or do something. Six Music over here in London. There's a program called Six Music,
right.
And he's a presenter. On a program in there called University of the Strange.
Oh, great.
So he plays weird records, and he has a sort of email following. I think people who can pick him up around the world do. So he's into that. And certainly they both came along to the tours.
I bet he loves his dad.
They were extremely useful in that they could become sort of personas that, if we wanted maybe a couple of people to come in and sweep up, or two policemen to come in or something like that. It's very useful to have these guys around.
Oh, yeah.
But Unfortunately, with our latest thing, the three bonzos and a piano, it's not really possible. We're in smaller venues. We're playing smaller venues, and you know, there's maybe not room.
It was either them or the piano, I suppose. Yeah.
Sorry, that was.
It was either them or the piano.
It was them or the piano, and I think, you know, we really do need a piano. We need some sort of music going on. Because we all make a terrible row, so there's quite a dedicated following going on over here in England. So it's enormous fun at the moment.
Yeah,
have you ever thought about playing for the Queen? Has she asked you to the palace?
You say that as though that were a sort of option.
Well, I kind of fully expect she's a hip woman beneath all of that, you know.
She had
elegance.
Well, I tell you, we've got a program here called, and you've got it over there, haven't you? Simon must have brought it over there. Britain's Got Talent, and America's Got Talent,
right?
It's where East Coast, probably, is it, or has it come over to the?
No, it comes over here. Yeah.
Well, we've got Britain's Got Talent,
wow.
And this is. They're all competing for a chance to play for the Queen.
Oh.
And, gosh, there's some stuff on there.
Oh, my God.
I can't
pretty banal, huh?
I can't begin to describe it, but it's certainly the sort of stuff we could do very easily. But I don't think we'll enter that business.
Well.
So, Sam Spoons, has a nice phrase that he shouts out halfway through our act. You know, he says, "Has the Queen arrived yet?" as though she ever would.
Now, going back a bit again, I want to, because everyone loves Monty Python here. Now, you were there really at the beginning with Do Not Adjust Your Set,
yeah.
The TV show. How did you get on that and really start? Really inspire the Python people.
Yeah, we were in when that started. There is a producer over here, or there was, I don't know, in those days, called Humphrey Barclay, who produced a lot of that sort of stuff. And at the time, I think John Cleese and certainly Eric Idle and Michael Palin and the other chap who will not forgive me for not forgetting his name. People. Why are we starting this again? I don't know. but the early chaps were straight out of Footlights, you know, the Cambridge thing. So it was sort of very much university stuff. And they had a producer who was producing this stuff called Humphrey Barclay. And I think he came down to one of our northern cabaret clubs. We were playing in the northern cabaret clubs and said, we've got this idea for the new show and we need a musical number each week. You know, I've heard about you guys. Would you like to do it? So we did, really. So it started through Do Not Adjust Your Set, yeah, for kids.
Right.
But as we drove around the country, we spoke to people. We found most people, it was sort of adults were watching it, really.
Exactly.
At that point, it ran its course, really. From that the Monty Python grew, and we split up.
Right.
The Bonzos deceased, and the Do Not Adjust Your Set crowd went on and became Monty Python.
Exactly, the phoenix rising from the ashes, yeah.
Yes, we sort of watched with sort of amusement at what they were doing, and we'd sort of split off and did our own thing, really, which I don't know quite we knew what it was, but I certainly think we found we'd run our course together.
Have you kept in touch with Denise Coffey?
No, I personally haven't, no. She turned up in Viv's film, didn't she? I'm sure you spotted that. Sir Henry at Rawlinson End.
Oh, yeah.
She's great. She was in Waltz of the Toreadors.
She had a part in that. As did Vernon Dudley Bohanal. He had a bit in that. But I haven't, not really. I did a few jobs for the chaps, for Eric Idle and Michael Palin. They ran a show over here called Up Sunday.
Hmm.
Up Sunday. And I did a few sort of robot spots for them back in the 70s again. So I really did very little after the late 80s. I stopped doing the solo act, but I joined up with Dave Glasson and Sam Spoons, which were the nucleus of our latest venture, the Three Bonzos and a Piano. Sort of saw its roots back in the 80s with an act we called the Slightly Dangerous Brothers.
Oh, right.
We would play around with that. But we never linked it really specifically to the Bonzos. It was just known as the Slightly Dangerous Brothers, featuring people from the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band. But now we're absolutely outrageously cashing in on the on the name. Absolutely barefaced, blatant plagiarism of the name.
Fantastic.
So which of your tunes do you get the most joy out of performing these days?
Which of the two?
Yeah, which of the tunes? Which of your songs?
Oh, the tunes.
I have
right.
My favorites. I love Follow Mr.
Well,
I love... Go ahead, please.
I tell you, yes. Well, what we're doing at the moment in the stage act, in the show, are, first of all, numbers that... because if you listen, if you are truly a fan of the Bonzos, you'll spot the sort of change over halfway through our life. Where Neil got up off the piano, picked up a guitar, and stood up at a microphone. And Larry put down his sousaphone, because it used to dribble spit all over his trousers. And didn't like that anyway. Larry put down... Sam and Vernon left the band. Larry put down his sousaphone and went on the drums. We found a bass player. One guy from over your side of the pond, Joel van Druckmann, he turned up, played the bass with us for a bit. So you'll spot that we sort of left the sitting down saxophone playing, and Neil picked up the guitar and started singing and writing songs. So what we do really with Three Bonzos and Piano is that our main instruments are the two saxophones of myself and Rodney. So we do play the earlier stuff because we've got all the genuine instruments, things like Jollity Farm and Mr. and Mrs. Mickey Mouse and all those sort of things, which we can obviously play very easily because we are the original instrumentalists,
right.
Indeed, even. who used to play that stuff, so we can sound quite authentic. We do have with us occasionally also a chap from Grimm's the Liverpool Poets called Andy Roberts.
Oh, Andy Roberts is wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh.
He's got a fan on the West Coast.
Oh, you bet. I used to watch the Liverpool scene all the time.
He's with us quite often, actually, Andy. For two reasons, basically. He knows the stuff, and he lives in Brighton, where we started off. Our pianist, Dave, lives in Brighton.
Oh.
And our first experimental gigs just before Christmas this year were down in Brighton. So Andy sort of mixed in with the band. So he plays with us when the stage allows, because we are, as my son Justin said, you know, you're going back to the roots now, grassroots now. So sometimes we play in clubs that, you know, it's like postage stamp stuff. we can't fit Andy on the stage, but we are now going to move into slightly bigger theatres, 300 seaters, and there'll be room. So Andy's played a couple of times with us, and excellent stuff. And of course, being a multi-strimmed instrumentalist, he can change the feel of the band quite easily, depending if he's on a banjo or on an electric guitar, really. So it enables us to do it very easily with the banjo, all the old stuff, you know, which we can do.
Right.
And if I have to admit it, I probably prefer that stuff, if you can bring it out of me. But we can also do some selected numbers of stuff sort of, let me think, sort of, let's say, pre-Caintrum.
Oh, okay.
Material, mainly, you know, sort of the guerrilla stuff that you know, the odd things, like Iron Board and Big Shot.
Oh, my favourite, Big Shot. Yeah, I love
that. Yeah, well, we thought we'd do that, because really I can't sing, but I thought, you know, let's have a go.
Yeah.
Let's have a go. So we do pay tribute to Viv in that we do his numbers.
Great.
Certainly it would be inappropriate for us to do any of Neil's numbers, really, because, you know, Neil does those. So it would be rather bad taste to do things like Urban Spaceman and things like that. So we do have to say that if I do a radio interview over here or something, they play a bit of music. You know, I do have to try and say, please don't play Urban Spaceman, because we don't do it in the act. And so we can't do that sort of stuff. Mr. Apollo, those sort of things. So we do have to disappoint a few people, but people seem to be satisfied with things like, as I say, a Big Shot, Tent. And Rodney does a few tributes to Viv's solo work, which is quite nice.
Oh.
From Viv's album, Ginger Geezer. Not that one.
Teddy Boys.
The song is called Ginger Geezer.
Teddy Boys?
Teddy Boys Don't Knit, yeah.
Yeah.
Rod does Ginger Geezer. And we do an early one called Alley Oop, which you may not have heard.
Oh, great
of.
Song.
Yeah, we met...
Hollywood Argyles.
We met Kim Fowley over there, actually, walking along a street in L.A. when we were over there. So we do another one of Kim Fowley's numbers, Nut Rocker, by... what are they? Bee Bumble and the Stingers. Which is a sneaky bit of Kim Fowley, actually.
Really?
The sheet music, it's by Kim Fowley.
Oh, wow.
His version of the Nutcracker Suite.
Oh, how great. That was a huge hit.
So we do another Kim Fowley number. We do, as I say, Tent, Blumensing the Whites.
Do you do sports?
All sort of Viv's numbers that we feel we can do as a tribute.
Yeah.
I've got no problem with being called a tribute band, quite frankly. I quite enjoy being my own tribute band. You know? I'm not sure there are any other bands that, you know, I don't think the Stones call them, go on and call themselves a tribute band. But,
good point.
We're actually the only tribute band that uses 100%
the original people.
But so because we do say that, you know, we have to. This is not ripping off Viv Stanchel. We hope we're sort of, you know, being faithful to the memory. Really,
did he really play tuba? Was that his instrument?
What, Viv?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was his first instrument.
Really?
And I tell you, it was my last memory of Viv, actually, was. Back in, once again, here I go, back in the, well, this would be the 80s now.
Yeah.
The early 80s. He did a series of concerts at the Bloomsbury Theatre here in London. First of all, it was Rawlinson End. Then it was just a show of bits and pieces, really. And on that one, he asked Rod and I to come along and play. And we had Jack Bruce on bass and various odd people who were playing all his sort of numbers from his solo albums. And Viv was in quite a state at the time. I mean, he really was. You know, five drinks and he was okay.
Oh, gee.
Six drinks and he was... four drinks and he was awful. Five drinks he was okay. Six drinks he was over the top, you know, and lost. And so they had to be a sort of guy employed to stay with Viv and keep him on that. And so Viv was really very aware that... there were a lot of people there, you know, obviously a great love from the audience. And he had quite a sort of tradition to uphold, really. So he was a bit nervous throughout his shows. But he said, halfway through, you know, he said, come on, let's all go to Mary's House, which you probably won't know of. Hmm. It's an old number that we used to do at the Tiger's Head in Catford. We did it on For the Love of Dogs.
Okay.
Our latest CD.
Oh.
we released, we did about a couple of years ago. We did it on that, Let's All Go to Mary's House. But we used to do it back in the Tiger's Head, and Viv at the Bloomsbury said, let's do that, you know. And it sort of a bit baffled Jack Bruce and the Heavy Rockers. So we did that. I thought it was a good excuse. I said, yes, Pico, Viv, yeah, I'll play trumpet. So I played trumpet, and Rod was ramping away on saxophone. And Viv just picked up the tuba, which he'd brought along sneakily. And I think at that stage of the act, something had involved him taking his trousers off. I don't quite know why. But anyway, my lasting impressions of Viv was striding around the stage, playing this huge tuba, and really a look on his face as, you know, he was a contented man. So really, I think we're rather hoping, and a few people have told us really, that Viv would have approved, I hope, of what we're doing at the moment.
Yeah.
Which is, we are sort of delving back to the tuba playing years.
Great, great. Mm.
Because, yeah, I mean, Viv played tuba, and then he didn't, because he brought his mate in, Legs Larry Smith, and Larry couldn't play anything to save his life. Not that we could, really, but... so the tuba was the easiest thing to sort of fake something.
And he carried a euphonium?
You'll have to say that again. What?
He carried a euphonium? Is that true?
He carries...
a euphonium.
A euphonium?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Viv, yeah, held it. Yeah. It was a full-size euphonium. Yeah,
amazing.
They are holdable. the sousaphone you wrap round yourself. That's the instrument you wrap round yourself. You know, you've got them over there in the hundreds, haven't you? You guys over there, big marching bands.
Oh, yeah.
March up and down at football matches and whatever you call them over there. What do you call them?
Parades and...
We call it football. It's just different.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever goes on in those big stadiums, and you have the league, major leagues, or I don't know, anyway. Whatever goes on there, and you get these big marching bands parading up and down with these huge white plastic sousaphones. It's not one of those. It's just a euphonium. It's a self-contained instrument. But you hold it and play it, yeah. Unfortunately, that's one instrument we don't have in four, but three bonzos and a piano. In fact, we're so poor over here, we have to share a saxophone.
Do you each have your individual reeds?
Passing the saxophone around. But, yes, so the euphonium was a sort of starter instrument for all the bonzos, really.
Oh, wow. I'm looking at a great quote by Neil Innes. He was quite plump in those days. He had on Billy Bunter check trousers, a Victorian frock coat, violet pince-nez glasses, and carried a euphonium. He also wore large pink rubber ears.
Yes, that would be Viv. Yeah. Well, if you listen to Tadpoles.
Yes.
Now you know about Tadpoles.
We have it.
The Yellow Album, yeah. So really, Three Bonzos and a Piano is the back cover of Tadpole's band. We were going to call ourselves that. It's us old types that were relegated to the back page of Tadpole's. But anyway, Shirt on Tadpole's. If you listen to the spoken intro on Shirt, which is genuine bit of vox pop. Oh, no. I'm telling you complete fibs. So forget Tadpoles. It was the other track, We Are Normal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The reason I'm confused is it was recorded on the same day.
Oh, okay.
We just used it on a different track. You'll hear on We Are Normal sort of people talking. One man says, they're very nice people, and all this. But then an Irishman says, he's got a head on him like a rabbit.
Yeah.
He has the head of a rabbit.
Yeah.
Well, that was a person in the street being interviewed by our visiting American chappie of Joel von Druckmann, who took over the microphone at the time. And Viv decided... that he would at this point in time, because I think we were asking people, what is normal, who are normal, you know, and Joel said, would you call that person normal? And what Viv had done is he'd passed over to the other side of the street, and he had a rabbit's head that it wasn't actually, it was just the ears, basically, I think, in some sort of ghastly pink sort of fur. And he'd taken his trousers off once again. I was just walking along the street on the other side of the road with no trousers and this pink rabbit's head on. And this caused the Irishman to say, he has the head of a rabbit. He's not normal. So, yes, Viv would do things like that, yes.
Beautiful. Now, talking about recording, a couple of years ago, I saw Neil Innes. He was in San Francisco on his tour. And one thing he mentioned, that you guys were recording in the Abbey Road studios the same time as the Beatles were recording Rubber Soul, I think it was.
Yep.
Do you remember that?
Oh, yes. Yes, I remember that. Because we were sort of... it was a fairly new experience for us. Being in something as large as Abbey Road, because normally up until then we'd recorded things in the back rooms of pubs and things. And in fact, the two tracks are on in Tadpoles. There's Dr. Jazz and Laughing Blues, were recorded in the back room of a pub in the Bird in Hand Passage.
Oh my goodness!
On sort of army surplus tape recorders. It was interesting. We were doing My Brother Makes the Noises for the Talkies, I think. We sort of flashed through that. And we wondered what this gaggle of girls was doing outside. And then all just, the open door of the studio, the sort of four guys walked past. It's the Beatles, Okay, well, come on, let's get on with some work. Ho-hum, yawn. But Neil couldn't resist rushing out and earwigging with them.
Yeah.
So it was sort of Beatle worship after that. I could take them or leave them, really. Four chancy lads from Liverpool. My wonderful memory of old Larry, actually, Legs Larry Smith, wonderful smudgy, who...
Smudgy?
Yeah. We have names.
Oh.
It's Smudgy Smith.
Oh.
My name is Spread. I used to be called Spread, Spread. Because Melody Maker, heard of the Melody Maker?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Magazine or English music newspaper.
There, way back, still going, I think, isn't it? I think it's still going. They used to print letters. You'd have readers' letters and all that.
Oh, yeah.
So I wrote in, because they'd done a series of letters about fictitious spoons players. because Peter Sellers did a thing, with some spoon player, Fred something Scuttle, whatever it was. And so, and I thought, hang on, wait a minute, we've got a real spoons player, So I wrote in a sort of indignant letter saying that, didn't anyone realise that we had Sam Spoons, a real Spoons player, none of this, and they printed the letter, but they misprinted my name, it should be Spear, my initials are RWR, so it was RWR Spread of England, and everyone immediately knew exactly who it was. And from then on, in 1966, that's what I'm called.
Okay.
So we've got Smudgy Smith, and we've got Neil's Jock, of course. So give us a tune, Jock.
Oh, okay.
Appears on the back of Alibaba's camel.
Oh.
And Smudgy Smith. And for some reason, Vernon Dudley Bohay Noel was called the Gnome.
The Gnome.
I think it was just basically because Viv used to like getting his vowels around Vernon Dudley Bohay Gnome. It was quite funny. So he became the Gnome. Sam Spoons, of course, is not his real name.
Okay. Sam Fork, right?
He's named by Vernon, in fact. Said, yes, you should be called Sam Spoons, because, you know, so he's stuck. And all his closest friends, I mean, I call him Sam, we all call him Sam. It's not his name. So we have different names. Why did I start telling you about that?
It was about the Beatles, I think, and then you...
Paul McCartney and the Beatle worship and all that.
Yeah, and it was because you called Larry...
Smudgy Smith.
Smudgy. So what about Smudgy's Call Me Adolf?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
He's been on about that for years. He's finally sort of got some sort of iPod thing. I don't know anything about all these things, but it's some sort of electro way of getting it. He's sort of done that. He's going to do a show with us actually in the next couple of weeks in Salisbury. We thought he might be doing that there, but he's now moved on to Lord Larrington III. So that persona may emerge at some stages. So we're going to be treated to Lord Larrington III. But as I say, back in those days, Larry really enthused about two things. Coming to America, what was a sort of goal for Larry, and also being seen with famous people was one of Larry's watchwords. And of course, who could be more famous than dear old Macca,
right?
Wasn't called that in those days, coming in to produce our record for us. And I remember in Bond Street, which is a big street in London, where the studios were, we'd finished, and we all sort of trooped out of the studio to say goodbye to Paul, you know. Not Sir Paul at the time, but just Paul. My endearing sight of, we're saying, well, cheerio, Paul. And Larry's still walking down the road. You know, I want to be seen next to Paul McCartney as long as possible. He disappeared right down Bond Street. an endearing sight of it. From that point on, I suppose I must have seen Larry after that, because we did a few shows. But that was an Urban Spaceman wasn't really the end of us, was it, really? It was the beginning of the end. But there were a few more years after that. So it wasn't my last sight of Larry, but it's my one endearing memory of him. until, of course, our recent revival. Larry has now become a responsible member of society, really.
Oh, no!
Apart from the tearaway he was in those days. But he can tell you about it all.
Oh, okay.
He can tell you all about it if you want. I'll put him on to you. You can put you on to him or what.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah, I'll do that if you like. I'll send you something.
That would be great.
You can have a chat with Larry. He'll tell you what he's doing. He's an independent operative at the moment, so that's fine. You know, it's sort of we're all doing all these different things, which is quite good, really. You know, I mean, what we're doing with three bonzos and a piano is actually we're trying to take, because the economics of the thing was that getting the bonzos back together again, and also recreating the studio sound. Because I mean, all the numbers you guys sort of know from the albums, we never played on the road. I mean, our road show in the 60s was there's nothing like the album.
Oh, wow.
We used to do Blue Suede Shoes, and easy things like Canyons and sort of the Trouser Press and things like that. But we never did things like I'm Bored or Rhinocratic Oaths. We might, I think we did. It was musically too difficult to sort of do all that. So when we did the reunion, it would have been pointless without, really playing on stage the things that people have been listening to for 40 years, the albums. So that involved, really, four or five other musicians.
Right.
Laying down a basic thing. So the Bonzo reunion shows of a couple of years ago were big affairs. You know, 16 people on stage at one time.
Wow.
And that, you're talking money.
Right.
And the only way to do that is to go into, you know, 1,200 seaters, 1,500, you know. That was a strain on the pockets of our dear promoter. there's no way we could continue that. So we've started, as I say, with a quartet, which we can put into smaller venues. And I think the audience, they enjoy being close up to the rubbish, you know. It's total rubbish. And as I say, the aim really is to recreate those the Tiger's Head days.
Okay.
As a sort of almost a workshop, where we had one review written over here. It's on the internet somewhere. You can pick it up. If you punch in a guy called Alex Lester.
Okay.
Alex Lester. You might come up with his site, and he's a late night DJ over here, a late night presenter over here on Radio 2.
Okay.
And he wrote a review of a show he saw recently, you know. And he did say that the sort of rubbish we create, where we actually stop numbers halfway through if they're not going terribly well and say, look, we'll start again, I think. And things don't work and fall over. And from any other band, that would be intolerable. Because we're all such jolly decent chaps, we get away with it. So we can get away with it in the smaller venues. And it's quite exhilarating because, I mean, at some stage, people are sort of only a matter of sort of feet, even inches away from Sam Spoons playing the electric spoons on Monster Mash. And that is terrifying stuff because we put about 50 kilovolts through him.
Woo!
And, you know, he doesn't like it. But it's quite leery stuff. It's a sort of different, slightly different perspective than the big stadium. Well, we never did stadiums, but the big
arena. Yeah. Show.
It's a slightly different thing, but it's nevertheless we try to give a complete range of sort of the Bonzo's experience really
right.
on stage, which is different than the records.
Interesting. Never thought of that.
Yeah. May I interrupt for just a minute? I want to announce what station the folks are listening to. This is Stephen Gross. You're listening to The Mystery Train, KOWS. Cows, 107.3, high above the mystical village of Occidental. And we are enjoying our interview with Roger Ruskin Spear, one of the founding members of Bonzo Dog Doodah Band. And it's, for us, the equivalent of interviewing Abraham Lincoln or Jackie Kennedy.
Exactly.
I say.
By the way, I wanted to tell you, Roger, that Alex Lester is currently playing Jules Holland on his show.
Is he?
It says so right on the screen here at KOWS. It's the magic of cyber technology.
It's wonderful
it's
stuff.
It's astounding.
Why are you... Yeah, well, hold on a minute. It's 11 o'clock over here. He's supposed to be on at 3 o'clock in the morning over here, but it's all weird stuff, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. It is.
It's beyond me. It's beyond me.
It's a shame we have to sleep at all. this has been a lot of fun.
Ask me another question.
Sure. Well, I got one. Again, going back to the old days, why is your bit in the Magical Mystery Tour always cut out in America?
Oh, good question.
Is it really?
Whenever it's shown, it's the bit in the when they go in the tent and the stripper bit, and you know, it's gone.
The stripper's gone.
Yeah.
Well, it's got to be the stripper, hasn't it? I suppose. The only thing I can think of. You obviously know what goes on in the bit that's cut out,
right?
You've seen the full bit. It's nothing bad, is it? Really?
No, nothing bad at all.
No,
sleazy, but not bad.
I don't know. I don't know what goes on over there. What your morals are?
Oh, make something up for God's sake,
you people. Well, yes, I mean, I had the robots on, but they cut them out of everything.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I brought the robots down, but they didn't seem to think they would fit, you know. Apparently, they're on, Ringo assured me that they keep... Because they all... In those days, it was like... I think it must have been... You know, there's no such thing as video.
Right.
It was 8mm cine film. And all the Beatles had their own little things, you know, were doing their own... Doing their own film, really, at the same time.
Oh, wow.
So Ringo said, ah, sure, right, I don't know.
That was Irish.
Liverpool accent, yeah. For you. nearly did an Australian accent. Picked that up at some stage, the TOTP, which I used to get people sending me, the dear old Trouser Press. And I'm still playing the original Trouser Press.
Oh.
Which is a genuine Trouser Press. It's a genuine British one. I found it in the attic of a house I moved into back in the 60s.
Oh.
And it's still going.
Wow. Did you know what it was when you found it?
I found it.
But did you know what it was when you found it?
Oh, yes. Yes. It's clearly marked Everett Press. with a label that is still on there. I do have to admit, in the sort of the psychedelic 70s, I painted it blue and red, which is a bit of a travesty, really, because this is now, it's a museum piece, really.
Yes.
And all my stuff I use really started out in the late 50s, 60s, when the Army surplus market was booming. And a lot of my stuff is Army surplus, which actually nowadays is worth quite a bit of money. One part of our act is amplifying the audience by clamping a series of throat microphones onto the front row of the audience.
I thought you were going to say clamping car battery cables to the audience.
I haven't quite got that far.
You have. You just don't want to talk about it, I can tell.
Yeah, don't encourage him.
These are throat microphones. And one astute member of the audience sent me an email saying, was that a pilot's throat microphone from the Lancaster bomber you put around my neck? And indeed it was. Indeed it was. And those were bought in the days when you could buy a sort of box full of Lancaster bomber throat microphones for sort of, you know, 2 and 6p.
Oh, wow.
But they're worth a bit more now. But the ones I've got are a bit... worn, you know, the worse for wear, really, because they've been used since the late 60s. But they still work, and we use them in tent. And you know there's a bit in tent where you shout tent about 4 or 5 times.
Oh, yeah, we played it before we called you.
Sorry?
We played it over the air before we called you.
Well, that bit where it goes tent, 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 that I amplify the audience so they can all shout, tent. And, of course, we're so pleased with this effect that it actually goes on beyond more than 4 tenths. It's usually about 24 tenths of shouting before we get bored with it and have to move on with the rest of the song. And the good thing about using these throat mics is I can control the sound coming out of the audience with my fingertips, you see. So I can cut them off at a second's notice. So I can get all the tents in time. And this audience think they've shouted tent in time to the music. But it's just me waggling the volume control up and down. And we can also stop the number quite smartly because I just pull the plug out. So that involves throat mic. Then there are various microphones scattered around. There's one on the Trouser Press. Has a Spitfire microphone on that. And one of my robots has a leather flying helmet, leather goggles from I think almost World War I, actually.
Oh wow!
So it's littered with them. was Army Surplus, the act, which is... I have to replace every now and then. I tell you what, the other day when we were doing a gig, I've got a robot that blows feathers out of its head. I actually made some for a group called, what were they called? Mott the Hoople.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right.
Who did an American tour. And they had seen my act, and they wanted a couple of robots, and so I built them two. And one was a feather-blowing machine. the head is built out of an old upside-down vacuum cleaner, which you fill with feathers. And they wrote back to me and said, you know, the robot's great, but we're doing this big tour of America, so we're having to pinch so many feather pillows. And we've got to be booked into hotels that have got feather pillows. Because we've run out of pillows very fast.
Why don't you get some pet geese?
Yes. that's the use of the feathers. Why don't I start talking about feathers this time of the night? What time is it over there?
Well, I had a friend who thought that we should all have feathers instead of hair, and that way we could go somewhere and get plucked instead of going to the barber. They're better insulators than hair. It's 3:15 here in Occidental.
Sorry?
It's a quarter after 3 in the afternoon here.
Yes. Well, is that the afternoon or the morning?
It's the afternoon.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, you said the sun was out, didn't you?
Right,
yeah,
right.
Lovely day.
What a lazy time, but I'm going to bed fairly soon. Can I go to bed soon?
Oh, yes.
Well, we hope you can make it here to visit one day. We'd love to meet you in person.
Yeah.
And we
yeah.
love your music. And besides... we'll have to have a benefit to pay for this phone call, so...
Yes, unless you reverse the charge.
Right. I don't know what Arnaldo is up to. He's
I'll receive the bill when I do.
Yeah, you'll find out next month, yeah.
So I'm talking to Stephen, am I?
This is Stephen, yeah.
That's Stephen, yes.
Arnaldo is the Brit.
Arnold's the voice in the background.
Right.
Yes. Are you a native, Stephen?
I am. I'm originally from New York City, moved to the West Coast in the late
60s. Right, you do sound like Garrison Keillor. Which I'm absolutely...
I thought I sounded more like Phyllis Diller.
Well, yes, after a few beers.
And a few facelifts.
I'm inordinately pleased about that. I think that's wonderful, because the two voices we enjoy... over here from Garrison Keillor and the letter from America.
Very kind.
Alastair Cook, yeah.
Right. That was always a great pleasure over here to hear that sound coming over. So that's good, because Arnold, you spoke to my wife earlier.
Oh, yes.
Yes. She said, I was expecting to hear Garrison Keillor. This Englishman. So it's good. It's good to hear you, Stephen.
Thank you so much. Well, the truth is, I've always wanted to have a larynx transplant. And I thought they could make Richard Burton larynx for me, perhaps.
I can try.
I mean, if they can give you a new liver, they certainly should be able to give you a new larynx.
Yeah. Legs Larynx
Smith. I'll tell you what, yes, you must have a chat to old Legs Larry Smith, Lord Larrington III.
Yes.
See how he's getting on over here. So I'll furnish you with the details.
Oh, that's wonderful, Roger.
On the EE system, you know. And... you can have a chat with him. So I'm going to have to say goodbye to you.
Okay,
guys.
We'll let you go to bed. Thank you so much for your time.
And we've got a show tomorrow, not tomorrow, the next day, and we don't do them too often. We do about twice a month, but usually it's so chaotic that it takes us about half a month to get everything repaired,
right?
and you know, sewn back up again. So I'm in the middle of repairing. The feather one, in fact, yes, he broke after, what is this, 40 years.
Oh, no.
Because he's a vacuum cleaner I put in the 60s. And he chose the gig the other night to pack up completely. Oh. So I've rebuilt him. So I'm sort of putting the finishing touches to him at the moment. And that'll do for one more gig. So we've got several to go through the summer, and we're taking our show a bit further field. Whether we'll go over there, I've no idea. That would be great fun.
Oh, wonderful. You'd be very well welcomed, yeah.
I'm sure we'd, because when we did appear back in the 60s with the band, the original band, where we sort of made it across and kept going, the reception was very good, you know, the audiences were always very good. And we're finding with this show we're doing now, the audiences are very good, but they're all old. As old as us, and it's a bit of a shock.
Does it look like a box of Q-tips as you stare out over the audience?
But Rodney Slater, he's starting to write some material as well.
Oh.
Which is good. He's writing songs.
Excellent.
Mainly to do with old age, but about being old geezers and losing in memory and stuff like that. But it has a resonance with our audience, our fan base.
Right.
So it's good. It's good. We've got a few years ahead of us yet.
Good, good, good. We're looking forward to them.
we're trying to take the old stuff and sort of bring it forward. One pundit over here said, we are Dada for the new age by the old sculptors of surrealism. So that's a rather intellectual, mouthy version description of what we're up to. That means anything to anyone.
Well, you'll start getting museum gigs, so.
Yeah.
Well, it's been...
I'll say bye-bye.
Okay, thank you so much.
Is there anything else I can help you with over there?
Oh, you can give a shout-out for Cows Radio.
Right, we are KOWS 107.3.
You want me to tell you,
Jeff? Yeah, if you could,
that would be
KOWS
107.3.
They've tuned off now. I've got the frequency wrong. They've gone.
107.3, and we are streaming also. So
wait a minute, Alan. I can do something. I can do something clever. My end here.
Okay.
Oh. Yes,
which end?
Yeah. Okay. I've got it now. What is it? KOWS FM.
Yes.
Correct. 107.3
FM. There you are. Yeah. I've
right.
got your email here.
Oh, great.
And we are streaming, so if anyone wishes to tune us in, we're easy to find.
Yep, 107.3 FM.
You got it.
I'll tune it in from here. Well, I don't know if you'll make it across
and
there. But,
we are normal, you get it. Too.
Thanks so much, Roger. Thank you very,
thank
very
you.
Much.
Have a good night's sleep.
Yeah, it's great to hear you.
Okay.
Buy a bigger baked bean tin next time and pull the string a bit tighter. And I'll put Larry on to you. You can have a word with old Larrington. He's still going. He's good fun.
That would be great.
It's been great fun talking to you guys.
Stay healthy.
Yeah.
Yes. Keep playing.
And thank you for indulging us.
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Cheerio, guys.
Bye-bye.
I'm going to hang up now. Cheerio, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Stephen. We are... normal. At least we're under the illusion.